It's actually a really good garlic bread.
Garlic bread is my favorite food. I could honestly eat it for every meal, or just eat it all the time without even stopping.
You get fat.
No, why would I get fat?
Bread makes you fat.
Bread makes you fat?
Welcome to the Geek Generation, episode 18. I am joined once again by Dave Palmacci, who's back after a much too long absence. How you doing, Dave?
Doing pretty good. I was lost at sea for a while there and made it back to shore. I had to shave my beard full of seaweed, but doing good now. Doing good. Got the salt water out of me.
Yeah, you don't smell like ass anymore.
No, I don't.
That's always good.
It's good to be back, though, guys. Yes.
So, Dave, you were telling me you had something you wanted to talk about with me specifically this show.
Yeah. First off, guys, I have to be humble right now and share a bit of my humility. But oftentimes, I rather be wrong about something for a good reason and be laughed at for "ha ha, you idiot," than be ignorant and try and stick to what I originally thought would suck. And what I thought would suck was the movie Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I saw it and I had the expectation going into it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to hate this. And I couldn't hate it, man. I thought it was really well done. And a big part of it was the smooth transition of it. I'm not a big anime fan. I'm very picky on anime. I have that same way with like horror movies, I guess you could say. Like, mm-hmm. Very, like, I only like probably 1 or 2% of anime, but the way it had this comedic anime style to it,
yep,
of like those mangas and just the quirky type of different humor, because comedies now, it takes a lot for me to laugh at a lot of the comedy movies they have out now, because most of it's just shock factor and really gross jokes and
right.
And it's done over and over, but that wacky, really clever humor that's just really quick, and Scott Pilgrim vs. the World had that, just these really quick things where, like when the his Asian high school girlfriend comes to the door and he like jumps out the window.
Right.
Stuff like that, it just had me bawling. And it had a great story, and you know, it kept my interest, and I said, wow, I gotta go on the podcast and admit to everybody I was dead wrong, but I'm glad I was. I'm glad, like, I really enjoyed it. And you know, I don't like Michael Cera, but I could see what you were saying, that role was for him.
Right. I feel it was, like, we've talked about in length before how much Michael Cera kind of gets under our skin, but this really felt like the role for him.
Precisely. Yeah, it totally was. And the only thing I didn't like, and I think we talked about this in an email, that's just Hollywood, is the end of it where...
Spoiler alert.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Spoiler alert. Okay, guys, so if you haven't seen it...
Fast anyways, forward 20
at
seconds.
At the end... Thank you for that, Rob.
Yeah, no problem. That's what I'm here for.
But yeah, at the end, the girl that he... that had the huge crush on, the Asian girl,
yep,
she just kind of tells him, oh, like, what are you doing? Go after the main girl that Scott's after, and like, go get her, type of thing. And that's Hollywood. It, to me, in real life, whether it's guy or girl, that's totally bullshit. I think that, like, that girl is be like, no, let her walk. You're mine now.
Yeah.
like, girls get very jealous, as do guys. And, you know, if I was in the situation with a girl I had a crush on and I told her to go after some other guy that was dressed all in leather jackets and punk rock, I'd I wouldn't say that if I really had a huge crush on. I'd be like, no, fuck him. I mean, oh, sorry, swear.
Oh no, yeah, we've gotten past that. We're good.
Okay, good. But yeah, so anyway, that was the only thing. I was like, oh, please, but I let it roll off my back because that's Hollywood. So
yeah, we mentioned that it is very unrealistic and unnatural for that to happen, but it is a Hollywood ending. And honestly,
yeah,
when
it's cute,
when she started, when Ramona started walking away, I was really like angry because he had been fighting for her the whole time, and you're so cheering for them to get together, and then you thought he was going to settle with knives, and you're like, no, but they turned it around, and it is Hollywood, yes, but I don't care because that's the ending I wanted.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I love Jason Schwartzman's character. He's amazing.
I thought the big standout for me was it would be either Chris Evans or Brandon Routh, because they were both hilarious in their roles.
Yeah, which one?
Brandon Routh was Todd, the bass player, that was with Envy Adams, and Chris Evans was the movie star.
Yeah, the movie star. He was hilarious.
Yeah,
he just had all these quick things that just kept on going as commentary. Remind me of the Old Spice commercial.
Yeah, you know, yeah, like, actually,
oh, look, I'm on a horse type thing.
Best line is when he gets the text and he's like, "That's actually hilarious."
Yeah. It's brilliant.
So good. But anyway, I'm so pumped you really liked it. I just watched it the other night again, since I do have the Blu-ray now, and I love it. I'm going to have a movie night real soon just for all the people who haven't seen it and the people who would love to see it again. Will be good time.
Yeah, guys, go see it. That's coming from a guy that originally had no plans to see it, and I was like, oh, you know, like I should watch it. You know, it's better to be fair and not a bigot and, you know, close-minded, and at least see something to then judge it. Yeah, that's what I did.
Cool.
I wound up loving it.
All right, well, with that little admission out of the way, let's move on to Geek Outs and Freak Outs. What are you geeking out over this week, Dave?
Yay!
It's sort of a minor thing. I haven't really discovered anything new, but the Geek Out is more of a personal project. If people don't know already, I have a creative side. I love drawing, painting, everything. I'm sort of the artiste.
This is true.
Yeah, I started working on a side project because what really got me into art was comic books, was superheroes and X-Men when I was about 11 years old, 12 years old. And I'm doing my last semester at art school here in Boston at the Museum of Fine Arts, and I'm getting ready to graduate, really excited about that, and I want to do some side projects that pay homage to my comic book roots, and I've been working on some illustrations and concepts on the side of taking mostly Marvel so far, Marvel superheroes and villains, and translating them into different historical times and different cultures in that time, because I'm a history geek, but I feel often, and this was the case with me before I wasn't a history geek, because I feel a lot of people are turned off by history when it's just dates and geography, and that gets kind of boring.
Well, yeah, but that's the stuff that bores the crap out of me.
Yeah, and everybody, I've taken, I'd say, just a general survey amongst my friends, and most of them feel like that. I used to be the same way. And it wasn't until I started listening to this. Can I plug another podcast?
Go right ahead, yeah.
Okay. There's this podcast called Hardcore History. It's by a guy named Dan Carlin. And the way he does it is he tells history in story form. And it really just captures your imagination and interest, because he tells it like a book or a story. And so what I'm doing with superheroes is I'm sort of changing the characters, and I'm drawing concepts of them in different historical periods, but having a story mold. For example, I'm taking Wolverine, but making him more Native American, especially like Northwest United States, very very shaman-like in that sort of feel. You know, he's got like the bear claw necklace, very grizzled, but a very tribal type of character. Scarlet Witch, naturally, it's very obvious, but goes back to more Wiccan origins. But a lot of people forget Wiccan had a lot of its roots in Greek mythology. So I think a lot of people think Wiccan as black, and that's sort of, you know, the New Age type of, I don't know, I guess Hollywoodish type of Wiccan, Harry Potter stuff, and that's not really like Salem Witch type of Wiccan. That's not really what I'm talking about. More of like Greek wearing, like very earth colored robes, things like that.
Almost like a forest nymph.
Yeah, kind of like, yeah, it's very sexy because I think Scarlet Witch is one of the sexiest comic characters in Marvel. I always had the hearts for her as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Doom, I was going to have him be sort of a fascist dictator in the 40s, sort of like a Mussolini type, and have all those posters of him, you know, around Latveria.
Now that I'm very curious to see, because I know how big of a Dr. Doom fan you are.
Yeah, I'm a very big Dr. Doom fan. And Captain America is probably doing like Revolutionary War style. See how that would go.
Nice.
But yeah, and just take it from there. You know, I might just add to it, and I'll be sure to let the Geek Generation be the first to know, and I'll post some pictures of the progress. But
that'd be awesome. Yeah, I'm interested. That sounds like a really cool concept.
Thanks, man. Yeah, so that's what I'm freaking out on. How about yourself, dude?
This week I am geeking out over Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, which I just picked up on Tuesday.
Nice. Now, you got to educate me, bro, because I never... I played a demo of the first one, and it was pretty interesting. It was very eccentric and out there. So, what's the deal with this?
Well, two iterations ago was the original Assassin's Creed game, and that was... there is a whole, like, technology spin to it. The main character...
Yeah,
the main character is this guy, Desmond Miles, and he gets put in... a machine they call the Animus, and basically it goes through your ancestral bloodline, and you have the opportunity to relive moments from your ancestors' history because you are tied to them through blood.
Yeah, and that's pretty rad.
Yeah, it's a cool concept. So in the first game, you go back as this character, Altair, and he's in this whole like League of Assassins type thing, and they're battling with the Templars. The Templars want like the classic... like world order type thing through the hard fist and all that stuff, where the assassins are kind of the undercurrent throwing them out of power. So there's that struggle going on and on. And the first game was good, but there was some monotony in it. The controls were a little clunky compared to what they've grown into. The second game, Assassin's Creed 2, introduced a new character, Ezio Auditore Firenze, and he is the... a more recent ancestor of Desmond's, and that all took place in like Italy in the, I think, what was it, the 15th century or something like that?
Renaissance, yes.
Yeah, all during the Renaissance time. You actually meet Da Vinci and everything, and he builds machines for you. You get to fly the flying machine in tow.
That's awesome. The little one, the helicopter thing that with the pedals, or the bird one?
The bat one.
Nice.
Yeah, the nice one. So that was really cool. And now Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, instead of making... there's some argument as to whether it's actually a sequel or more of an add-on for Assassin's Creed 2, because once again, you're picking up where you left off as Ezio. And the focus here is you're doing a lot of the same mechanics and everything that you did in Assassin's Creed 2, but now you're slowly building up a team, hence the name Brotherhood, and you're training other assassins. You can send them out on missions. You can have them help you out as you're going along. There are a lot of new mechanics to play, and the big new introduction for this one is that there's finally a multiplayer mode. And I started trying to play last night, and I had trouble connecting, but I actually just played probably 10 minutes before we started recording just to try it out so I could talk about it. So I've only played one round, and it seems really cool so far, because you're basically in whatever map they throw you in, and you choose one of six or seven different character models, and you're all assassins. There's like six of you that are live players inside of the multiplayer game, and you're given a target. You have to go out and kill them, but there's also someone hunting you. So it's really cool. It's a whole lot of paranoia, though, because the only NPCs that exist within this world are versions of the six or seven character models that are assassins. So you don't know which one of those guys is trying to kill you. You only know which one you're going after. And some of them can even disguise themselves. So it's pretty crazy.
That's badass. That's a really great idea, because, yeah, I don't like it if you had an assassin game where it's online and you have the live characters sort of standing out. It sort of defeats the whole disguise stealthy
right.
purpose of it.
Exactly.
Hmm.
But the one thing that I had trouble with, like, I did pull off a few kills and everything, and actually, like, a really good aerial kill in the first round that I was playing, but I actually saw one of the guys that was hunting me, and I just knew he was because of the way he was following me and everything, so yeah. I started looking at him, and I climbed up a building to try and make, like, a bit of an escape, and he started following me, so I'm like, okay, well, I'm just gonna kill him when he gets up near me, and I couldn't. You can't kill the person that's hunting you. I guess you can like hit something to stun him, but I didn't know that until after I played the round. So he was coming up to me. I tried hitting the button to kill, and he stabbed me. So I was like, "Oh crap, that's that didn't work at all." I just made it really easy for him.
Yeah, that sucks. It's like, hey, I'm gonna kill him. Wait, you can't use your knife. What?
Yeah,
dead.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a learning curve, but I think it'll be fun. So I'm geeking out on that right now. Good game so far.
Radical, man.
Yeah.
Radical.
What are you freaking out on this week?
Oh, freak out!
Ah! Freaking out.
Yeah, freak out.
What do you think? I was first going to freak out on... Dude, the whole thing of hipsters, man, it's not so much the chicks, it's the dudes. And this is going to come off to sound really hateful and prejudiced.
Go ahead, I hate hipsters.
Yeah. I mean, I go to an art school, and there's a lot of cool people there. And it's not so much at my school, surprisingly, that it's bad, but there's these – the whole principle of the hipster is sort of caring so much about not caring. The fashion is all the guys wearing girl-tight jeans that suffocate your balls and wear glasses that aren't prescription and sort of the retro clothing and – obscure references like seeing movies that or hearing music that no one else knows about is sort of the thing, and I call bullshit to it because I think we, the geeks, are more hipster in philosophy, even though that's not our like lifestyle or whatever, however the fuck you want to put it, because as of recent, I have a few friends that are hipsters, and they're really cool, probably because most of them are chicks, and I always give plus one to girls. It's okay, you have a free you know, you get an extra strike, you know, that, you know, it takes four strikes to strike you out instead of three, but anyway.
And then fifth if they're attractive.
Yeah.
We're not going to lie. We're not here to bullshit anyone.
Yeah, come on, guys. We're going to be such dudes here. But anyways, she's like, you know, I consider you a hipster. I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, you send me all these links to movies I've never heard about and music I never heard about. I said, well, that's because I'm a nerd. I said, I'm a geek. Like, I grew up on comics and all these other things and whatever. So, yeah, it's just kind of like, I don't know, it pisses me off if you're seriously that type of person that wants to be above everybody else in your mindset. And let's face it. You know, when I was 18, 19, I thought I knew everything. I think it's just a phase we all go through. You know, you graduate high school and you think you know everything for the world and you're in college for the first time. And yeah, I get everything set. So I think that goes with the hipster mentality of just thinking that you're better than everyone. But in reality, you know, you're just going to get punched in the face.
Well, yeah, one of the reasons hipsters are so annoying, and it's just because they're one of those grand contradictions where they're supposed to be emulating hippies in a way and down to earth and loving everybody, and yet at the same time, there's such a smugness and elitism about it.
Precisely, yeah, because at least hippies didn't, like, I don't mind if someone was to hug me, granted, yeah, they should believe in soap, but yeah, if you're going around and not showering and trying to preach veganism meanwhile while smoking. I never get that, how most hipsters are vegans but they smoke like a chimney. Like, I thought the whole thing is respecting like animal cells or whatever, but oh, it's fine if you disrespect your own
and then cause air pollution, which is going to kill the animals anyway, not to mention your fellow man.
Yeah, but again, like you said, dude, it's a whole contradiction. It's freaking ridiculous. Yeah, and so anyway, yeah, I've been freaking out of that. I think I'm gonna run a few over at my car, but then the split down the middle. As of recent, I've been also freaking out over the whole theme of alien movies that are coming out. I've counted, like, literally, I think, no, I didn't count then. Yeah, like 5 or 6 trailers. All the movies coming out to deal with the subject of aliens. Yep. There's Skyline, yep, which is like Independence Day again.
Which looks terrible, by the way.
It does look horrible. Dude, I wrote, what was it? I have a blog for one of my classes. We had to do it. It's like a online type of thing. But one of the joke things I put in was that, oh, hey, guys, I'm the art director for the movie Skyline. I said, hey, here's some of the concepts, and I just drew scribbles of the ships because that's what they look like. It's just a bunch of chaotic machinery, and I'm the type of guy that, as you know, I like to have reality checks for movies or just convince me. Mm-hmm. And these types of spacecrafts and the special effects seem to be getting worse and worse as movies go along, but the spaceships look like ass. They just look like a bunch of junk meshed together, and I'm like, who are the concept artists that are being paid for this that are doing the concepts for these movies? It's freaking horrible.
They're a bunch of Geiger wannabes.
Yeah, but Geiger was original, and he had like such depth to his concept art. It was original. It wasn't just, oh, let me mash this together and that's it. And
that sounds like Transformers 2 mentality.
Yeah, Transformers 2 was like that. It was like some of the Decepticons and whatever, the robot, you couldn't tell if you were looking at its head or its ass.
Right.
It's like, what am I looking at? Is that its head or ass? I don't know what's going on. And I just recently watched a trailer again for Cowboys and Aliens, and two of my favorite actors, Harrison Ford and Daniel Craig, are in that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why are they putting in aliens? It's just so weird. This could have been an awesome Western movie or something. And
right.
It just looks, I'm scratching my head.
Well, in defense of Cowboys and Aliens, I'm not going to defend Skyline at all because it does look like an ID4 ripoff. But in defense of Cowboys and Aliens, that isn't just something that Hollywood threw out to have something alien based. It's actually another comic book conversion that they gave to go, and Jon Favreau's directing it. So
yeah, it looks more interesting. Yeah, and I'd like to disclaim that if I had to see one, I'd probably see that. Except there was another, I forget the title of it. There's another one that it's a foreign one, made, I think it's made in Argentina or something. Mm-hmm. About aliens, but it looks really freaky. It looks like a different cup of tea, one that it has a more realistic thing feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the other one I want to see though is the movie Monsters. I don't know if that's alien in origin, but it sort of looks, it's an independent film, so it's only showing in select theaters, but it looks to be like Cloverfield without the shaky camera.
Gotcha.
So it's sort of an external view, because I think a lot of people didn't like Cloverfield for that. Mm. I love Cloverfield. I thought it was a really good movie, but I could understand people not liking a shaky camera. So
sure.
That's about it, man. I mean, just freak. And there's another movie. I think I forget the name of it. It's mostly with the military, in Los Angeles or whatever, or the Southwest of the United States, fighting an alien invasion. I'm just like, okay.
Oh, Battle for Los Angeles, or
that's it, Battle for Los Angeles. Something, yeah. Like, and I'm just like, all right, okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of the same. Well, you know how Hollywood goes to those fads. One script probably got picked up, and then every other studio was like, oh, that's going to be the thing. We have to put out an alien movie now. So
it's like either aliens, zombies, or vampires. They keep cycling through them all.
Yeah. But speaking of zombies, I'm going to throw a quick plug out to the comics podcast hosted by @Slim. If you want to listen to that. Yeah, if you want to listen to that, go to nerdcast.org. Mainly because I'm catching up on their episodes. I've been a little behind, and I just listened to episode 14. They had a great intro. Not only is it probably their best episode I've heard so far, but there was a great intro, by someone who gave all of his reasons why he doesn't like The Walking Dead. And it's not so much that he doesn't like The Walking Dead itself, but it's pretty much a bashing of zombies as characters and zombie movies. And I agreed pretty much with everything he said. So, and it was funny too. So a great introduction. Go check out the comics podcast, episode 14.
Dude, that's awesome. I definitely will listen to that, because I watched the first episode of Walking Dead, and it wasn't as bad as I thought, but I mean, you've listened to their episode, but I probably can see myself in the same boat with you guys. I'm starting to get really sick of zombies too. And the only two zombie movies that I highly enjoyed was 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later, because they really convinced me. But there were lots of parts to The Walking Dead that I'm like, okay, you guys did really good with this part, and now you're being really typical with these other parts. Like, it gets to be the same thing, and I kind of want more zombies seem to just be these, you know, they used to be people, and of course, but no one really goes into trying to take the in-depth concept of zombies a little deeper, other than, oh, they can transform now into these stupid looking CGI creatures or something, but mm-hmm. no one's really going into the psychology. Like, I would love, for example, to see a zombie sketch or short film or full movie of like a husband and wife, where say the wife turns into a zombie and
I'm sorry, we seem to be having some technical difficulties. In other news, my apologies.
You just totally cut out.
Oh, I did?
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. Say it again.
No, what I'd like to see is more the psychology of zombies. Like, for example, I don't buy people, like, if a husband and wife, one of them gets turned into a zombie, the husband suddenly shoots the wife mm-hmm. because he wants this. I'd be like, no, if my entire family got turned into zombies, I'm like, kill me. I'm not going to want to shoot you because you're zombies and that's what I'm supposed to do. But what I was saying is I would like to see a movie that has maybe a scene with if the wife or husband, vice versa, were turned into a zombie, one of them is chained up because they don't want to kill them, and it's more of the husband trying to get the wife back by introducing like either photos or all these like humanistic things. Like, he doesn't want to kill them, but instead it's another thing of trying to revert the zombie back and see where it goes from there.
So like lock up wifey in the basement, all chained up, surround her with things that maybe he's hoping will snap her back. Meanwhile,
having
a friend in the science industry working on a cure for zombieism and all that stuff. And
yeah, perhaps.
Pitch it. Copyright. Intellectual property.
Well, you can't copyright an idea, but if I
intellectual property.
But yeah, I mean the whole, that's just an example, but what I'm seeing is like everybody's doing zombie stuff now, and it seems to be the only solution to zombies is shoot them in the head type of thing without like for example in 28 Days Later, what I liked about it is that it was only affecting humans mm-hmm. and there was sort of this background idea of if this was supposed to be the way the evolution was turning out, because there's a scene where the main character is watching some horses run freely in the wilderness, that nature is starting to almost, you know, grow over the post-apocalypse of this outbreak of disease. And so just different things like that. It's like you know, blowing off zombies is cool, but I think...
Wait, blowing off zombies is cool?
Blowing away zombies.
Oh, okay. Like, I just needed some clarification there.
No, you don't want to do that. That's how you get disease.
Yes.
Yeah, that's another way if you can turn into a zombie. Trust me. But, hey, I wonder if... if your spouse turned into a zombie, could you claim their life insurance?
Because are they dead or are they undead? Does life insurance work for the undead?
I don't know. And hey, that's another topic. Like if a zombie, if someone was into necrophilia,
whoa,
would they turn into a zombie? No, dude. Hey,
I think it's a
geek type question. It's like, you know,
I feel like we're in Mallrats asking about every superhero's genitalia.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I won't go into detail, but it's something to ponder.
This is true.
But they turn into a zombie.
It's a good random thought. I'm going to move on to my freakout then. How about that?
Please do.
I have two. The first one's really short, and it's just that the site went down fairly temporarily the other day. We were having some server usage issues, I guess, which I'll take as a compliment that the site's actually getting more and more popular and traffic is increasing to the point where we were causing a load on the hosting service that I use. But I've made some modifications to the way the site runs and everything, and it was a matter of hours and we were back up. So that was just like a little minor freak out, but everything's fine and running, and the server is running at a normal speed, I guess. So all is well and back to normal. The other freak out is something I think most people around our age are kind of on the border of, and older people, it bothers them more, and younger people, it doesn't bother them as much because they're growing up with it. And that's just the whole idea of like cell phone etiquette. And when is it okay to pull out that cell phone and text people? And when is it okay to make a call or answer a call? What are the appropriate situations for, there are no rules for that. So I went ahead and I wrote 5 basic rules to just kind of inform the audience as to how you should be using your cell phones. And
do you have them?
I do. I wrote 5 rules right in front of me. I have them.
I'm glad you did this. Let's listen.
Well, people need to know these things because, and there's, since we are on that borderline, we are on that cusp, we can see why cell phones are beneficial and yet at the same time, how they're destroying some social situations. So. Yeah. Okay. I thought out of everyone, seeing as you're a bit of a social observer and scientist as I am, that you would appreciate these.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I have some feedback after you're done on this too. Go on.
Okay. Okay. These are my basic rules, and I'll start from the least severe to the most, I guess you could say. Rule number 1 is to never text, answer, or make a call while you're in a movie theater. This might seem like common sense, but don't even check what time it is on your phone. And when the previews start, your phone does not exist because I don't want to see that light pulling my eye away from the screen because I paid money to be in a closed environment. You're there. And don't tell me I have to watch movies at home. That's what movie theaters are for. I'm going to the movie theater to watch, and I want to watch it with other people because it's a different atmosphere.
Yeah.
Don't pull me out of the movie, though. I want to laugh with everyone else. I want to scream with everyone else. I don't want to hear your phone ringing. I don't want to see you texting. I don't want to even see that light blinking out of the corner of my eye because it makes me so angry.
Yeah, I hear you, dude. And that happens. And that's just a natural human reaction. Like you're in a dark theater and you see this bright blue screen pop up. You're going to look at it. Your eye's going to go away.
Right, and I know there's some people that say, "Oh, what if it's an emergency?" Well, what did you do before cell phones? You managed.
Yeah, exactly. I don't give a shit.
Right,
like the whole emergency thing. Yeah, what did you do before cell phones when you're at the movies? It's what, you know, we weren't in this huge crisis of I can't go to the movies because what happens if an emergency pops up?
Right, like guess what? Then don't go to the movies if you're that paranoid, and or if you're expecting a call, don't go to the movies.
Yeah, I know.
I had one. I'll take a little side tangent here just because this happened at a theater before and it drove me absolutely insane, is that there was a ring in the theater. There was probably myself, one other person, and maybe one person who was there with me and like 3 other people in the theater. There were 2 teenaged girls, and their father was sitting a row or 2 behind them to just clearly he brought them and they're gonna hang out, watch the movie, and he's gonna just watch it but by himself. So the her phone rings, and I'm assuming she starts talking, she answers it and she starts talking, and then gets up, walks over to her dad, and I'm assuming this is the end of it, and she's like, "Oh, it's for you." And I expected, "What are you doing? You're in a movie theater." But no, he proceeds to take the phone and talk to his wife, I'm assuming, and then walks back and gives it to her. That happened 1 other time during the same movie. And unbelievable.
This was while the movie was playing?
This was all while the movie was playing. Not even before or after or anything like that. While the movie was playing.
Shit. Yeah, people like that need to be slapped in the face.
But they do have that paint now that they're developing where you can paint buildings and it blocks the cell phone signal. I think every movie theater should be covered in it.
They should, yeah. It's, you know, it's ridiculous, dude. And it just, Yeah, I mean, we'll go through your list, and then I'll have my feedback.
Okay, I'm sure you're building it up inside right now.
Oh, dude, it's boiling already. Go on.
Okay, so that was number one. Number two, if you're in a one-on-one social situation where you're stuck together with no other forms of entertainment around, answer only family members or emergencies on the phone. Nothing else.
I agree, dude. It's one of those things where, and people have been shocked at me when I do this. It's whether I'm on a date or even just out with friends, and I'm talking to them live in person. Mm-hmm. They're in front of me. My phone rings, and I shut it off, and they gasp. They're like, "Aren't you going to answer that?" And I say, "Fuck no." I say, "You're here in front of me now. That person can wait."
That's right.
And no one else kind of thinks that. If I'm talking to somebody, if I just meet somebody and their phone rings and they tell me to hold on, I walk away. I say, screw you. That's totally rude and I, you know.
Right.
Whatever. I don't
care.
Yeah.
How awkward do you feel when you're out with someone in a one-on-one situation and they decide to either make a call or answer one and they end up on the phone for like 5-10 minutes and you're just sitting there twiddling your thumbs? Like, yeah, that's obnoxious.
It's stupid.
Yeah. Rule number three. Don't answer the phone or text when out to dinner. So if I'm out to dinner with my friends or family or whatever, they deserve my attention. That's where I am. They're my focus, just like you mentioned. When you're hanging out with someone, they deserve your full attention. That's the reason you're spending time with them and you're not just talking to them on the phone.
Precisely. And it's just like if you're going to have your phone on and answer it during dinner, you just walk around with a headset all the time. Like when you go take a dump, just have it there when you're in the shower.
Yeah.
Like what, why limit it? You know, what's when you're having surgery, you know,
I don't even need to text. It's like, I don't know. I don't need to text when I'm out to dinner. One, my hands are occupied with my food and my fork and utensils and whatnot.
Yeah.
And two, usually when you're at a dinner table, it's either eating or pure conversation. So what are you doing? I don't know.
Yeah, I think people just get bored and they feel they need it, like they're not even thinking anymore. They have to answer it.
Right.
They have to call. Say, hold on, this could be the president. But no, it's just, oh, hey, what's up, dog? What are you up to? I'm out to eat. That's what I sound like when I talk to my friends.
Sweet. That's why we don't hang out so much.
Yeah. Like, what's up, Rob? Dave, why do you talk like that on the film? Oh, I just think it's cool.
Rule number four. Do not text during a one-on-one conversation because it really just makes you look like an asshole. And you just don't care what the person's saying.
That has to be one of the top douchiest things to do, whether you're a guy or a girl. If you just – someone's talking to you and you're texting like, okay, hold on.
Yeah.
I had to type LOL to someone.
I'm totally listening to what you're saying, but it's not nearly as important as this electronic device is right now.
Yeah. And that's another thing with like text, how people feel they have to instantly reply to it all the time. And I've had to tell a few friends, and look, this is just statistic, not being sexist, but most of them are all girls. I mean, girls statistically text far more than guys.
Right.
But a few of my female friends are like, how can you, like, get back to me, like sending me a text to get back to the text they just sent me. And I'm like, I'm busy, or I don't even know what I was doing. I was either doing something or out, or I think I just laughed at them and said the typical LOL, wait, you stupid bitch. but yeah, it's caca. It's stupid.
Yeah. Last and final rule. Rule number five. Never, ever, ever text or make a call during a date. Only answer calls that are emergencies or date escape calls.
I agree fully with that. And because a girl will totally – I mean, that's a huge strike against you in attractiveness and for trying to win the – you know, and vice versa, I feel, as a guy, if I'm on a date – And if a girl picked up the phone just chatting with her friend, I'd be like, okay. I'd start thinking of the other stuff I could be doing right now.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's just you lose so many points for that. Unless it's, you know, oh, I'm really sorry, I have to take it. Which before the date start, I would let her know that. I would say, hey, I usually don't do this, but if my phone rings, I'm waiting for an important
call
to find out if I'm going to die or not, or heck, even if it was like an important like job interview for like James Cameron or something, you got to work on some movie set, you know, something.
Sure,
like,
that's acceptable. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I would hope she would say the same thing to me. And I would say, yeah, that's totally fine, because that's more respectable on that. Not, hey, we're talking about stuff and our childhood, and all of a sudden, ring, ring. Oh, hello, Karen. Oh, yeah, not much.
Yeah.
Yeah, did you watch that? I couldn't believe you. You know, they talk about some show they watched, and it's just.
Right. And it's that same thing of leaving you hanging and not really caring what you're saying. And like I said, though, the two exceptions, I mean, if you're expecting something, if it's a family member, like they're like, oh, that was my mom. Like, I can understand that, because you
and
never know.
That's cute.
Right. You never know if that's an emergency. And then the date escape call is always okay,
because
date over anyway.
Yeah,
so.
It's over anyways, so
right.
You might as well, like, hey, something really came up, my boss is begging me to come in, that we're doing this huge project, I'm so sorry.
Right, and it's really her best friend giving her an out if she needs it.
Yeah, but then, as you know, dude, like, sometimes she'll be attracted to you more, because you have this busy escape thing, and sometimes the other person will be like, damn it, I have to work harder.
Right, right.
And
but yeah, those are my five rules.
I agree, man. Yeah, but there are some benefits to cell phone. And there was a stand-up comedian that did this bit, because I can't take credit for it. I forget his name, but it might have been Brian Regan. I don't know. If the whole have you ever been walking in the wrong direction and you suddenly realize you're going the wrong way for something, or your car was back another way, and you don't want to look like an idiot. So you put your hands up in the air, turn around, and like take out your cell phone as if you're texting someone or calling someone, like, oh, I forgot something, or hey, you know, like, so that you don't look like an idiot, that you're walking one way and a bunch of people are seeing you, and all of a sudden you randomly turn direction. Oftentimes people will take out their cell phone as if, oh, wait, was it this way? Or, like, they're looking at a map or texting someone. Or,
right, it's
hey,
the ultimate embarrassment avoidance.
Yeah, it's just a self-subtle thing, and usually I'm sure people don't care, but I've caught myself doing it a few times.
Geek tip.
Yeah, and so, yeah, but that's an interesting freak out, and I think it goes along with geek culture, technology, and yeah, dude, it gets ridiculous, the whole and it happens often at, I haven't been to a club for a while, but when I used to go a lot, there would be guys, you know, instead of standing there by yourself, they're just like fiddling with something on their phone, or sometimes I'll count, like walking on the way to class, how many people are talking on a cell phone or doing something on it, which, you know, like, I understand, yeah, that's the time to do it, but and yet, like in those examples, it's not saying it's a good or bad thing, but it is something that I'm aware of, like, wow, you know, we're very sort of sewn to these devices now. They're becoming a part of us.
Yeah.
Well, so, and there needs to be etiquette with it.
Absolutely.
Because of that.
And that etiquette may change, and what is the accepted norm may change as we get older. Like, people growing up might not even consider that to be rude, but it is to us. So you need to respect those that do consider it to be and abide by some sort of rule.
Yeah.
Or else you're going to never understand why you can't get a boyfriend.
Yeah. Boy or girlfriend, for both sexes, they need to realize this, because that's the one thing. And, you know, being – like, I take a lot of art history courses. As I said, I'm a history geek, and a lot of things we've learned is it was more up. I mean, everything now is kind of a washed middle class, but there was a lot of upbringing with etiquette and manners for socializing. And now, since socializing is so fragmented and deconstructed, that people don't know how to have that etiquette. And it's not. And I see that a lot. And I think it's with the age too. You know, when you're younger, you're more shy and just not so. You're more introvert than extrovert. But I see that a lot with, you know, students, fellow students, but then I see it a lot even with people of all different ages. You know, in the city, that they don't know how to have any sort of manners or etiquette with people, or shake hands or smile or have eye contact. But that's a whole other topic.
Yeah.
I'm sure we can go on.
Yeah, we'll get into it at some point, no doubt.
Good stuff, man. I like those rules.
Cool. All right, well, I think it's a good time to take a quick break. And when we come back, we have some top three to play. We have a review of the movie Due Date, as well as listener emails and the news block. So we will be right back.
We all know the best podcast in the world is
The Geek Generation.
But what you might not know is there are other ones, such as...
Like you and me, Hector and Todd. Dangerous Memory.
That's right.
We're reviewing the AFI Top 100, and we're bringing you new episodes every Wednesday. Come check us out on www.hectorandtodd.com.
So, Anna.
Yes?
Christmas is on the way.
It is.
It is.
Stressful time of year.
Yeah. Where do you do most of your Christmas shopping?
I do my shopping on Amazon.com because I can do all my shopping from the couch.
Really? Well, that's very convenient.
It is. It is. It takes the stress out of the holidays.
Did you know that the Geek Generation is an affiliate of Amazon.com?
I did not know that, Rob.
You didn't? Well, what you can do to help the Geek Generation is go to www.thegeekgeneration.com, click the Amazon button, which will take you right to Amazon, and when you buy all the Christmas presents that you're going to buy, you'll actually be earning us a commission as well.
That sounds too easy.
So go to thegeekgeneration.com, use that Amazon.com button, and make us some money while you're doing your Christmas shopping.
It's super easy, and if you don't do it, you're a bad friend.
Hi, this is Charisma Carpenter, and you're listening to The Geek Generation. Yes, you are.
We are back, and Dave, it's been a while since you've been on the hot seat.
Uh-oh.
Yep. It's time to play Top 3.
Three, two, one.
This week's category is in the movie realm. I believe we did comics with you last time, but we'll go in movies this time.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you, Dave, what are the top three movie trilogies?
Top three. I mean, yeah, I can do that easily.
Ah, all right. Let's go, Mr. Big Stuff.
Definitely Twilight.
No. That's not funny.
That's not funny at all. The Matrix one. No.
Wait. Let me clarify first. What are the top three non-porno movie trilogies? Does that kill all your answers?
Yeah.
Oh, crap. No, go ahead. All right.
Star Wars is definitely number one, the original.
Yep. Now, some people are going to argue with you that that's not necessarily a trilogy, but I think people still refer to that as the original trilogy and the prequel trilogy, so that's safe.
I mean, before that, name me a trilogy that was well-known.
Right.
You know? What else? The second one, I mean, to me, the Lord of the Rings and Star Wars are neck and neck. I love them both.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little more biased to the Star Wars because I grew up on that.
Yep.
The original one. But Lord of the Rings is definitely up there. I thought it was a masterpiece of all three movies. I thought were extremely well done. I don't care what – I've read the books as well, and I thought it was the best adaptation you could have done. I know that there's a lot of Tolkien geeks that – you know, complain about the movies, they can go back to their little hobbit homes and crawl under their beds and hide away from society.
Oh,
like
snap! You just went there.
I went there, dude. Not really. I thought those movies were great. They're excellent.
They were good.
Yeah. The third trilogy that's top, I want to say Indiana Jones.
You say it with hesitation.
Because I could also put the Alien trilogy in there, but now I'm a big fan of Alien, even though I'm not huge into horror.
Mm-hmm.
Except the third. See, the thing is like it's kind of like with Indiana Jones, like the Temple of Doom one. A lot of people didn't like that one,
mm-hmm.
And with Alien, the third one was kind of amped. But the first two were amazing with Alien, and then Indiana Jones. The first and the third one were amazing. So, I mean, geez, it's tough to pick between the two. I mean, I'd say on more on a mainstream, a lot of people would probably vote Indiana Jones. But mm-hmm. for my personal taste, I'm going to vote Alien. So I go Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, and the Alien trilogy. But that's for me. But, I mean, a quick fourth would be Indiana Jones.
It's solid choices.
Yeah, pretty solid.
I do have mine chosen as well. And,
what are yours, dude?
Star Wars, the original. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
come on.
I also had Indiana Jones listed because also, and some people are going to say again that that's not a trilogy, but the fourth happened so far afterwards that you have to look at that original set as a trilogy.
Precisely.
And lastly, Back to the Future. Even though people argue 3 went downhill, I still think it's strong and holds up. So I'm going to keep it in there.
Yeah.
And as an honorable mention, even though it hasn't come out yet, I have no doubt that the current Batman trilogy, after The Dark Knight Rises comes out, that will probably be in my top 3. Because I can't see that movie bombing.
I can't either. Dude, Christopher Nolan, I've seen most of his movies. There's a few of his early ones I haven't, but I've yet to see any one of his films that I could rip apart or say, he could have done better. You know what I mean? He's just, the man is a genius.
He is.
And Inception blew my mind. The Dark Knight. And again, I use him as the classic example. I know I sound like this pretentious sort of art historian guy that I'm like, I want all these certain levels to my movies and zombies. And no, I think Christopher Nolan is the prime example of the principle of what I'm talking about. Is I think he does it so well that you can have a movie that's a blockbuster that has great visuals, great effects, action, simple story to follow, but then there's these levels of depth to it. There's all these background things and notions to it that are presented to an audience that has a brain, that, you know, because I don't think people are dumb. Oftentimes we you know, there's certain exceptions like the cell phone people we were talking about,
but
I think people want to see something that has some intelligence to it, and I think a lot of the movies Hollywood dishes out more of are the ones that cater to an audience that supposedly are zombies that have no brain.
Yeah.
But Christopher Nolan hits it on the spot, and he's amazing with characters. And that's why the rumor now is that he's producing the next Superman reboot or something.
The term they're using is godfathering.
Yeah, which I agree. I hope he writes a script for it. And recently you had – did you have a poll on who should play Superman, or it was just a topic? Because I have a new pick.
It was something we discussed, but I would be more than happy to hear your choice.
And I originally said Jim Caviezel, but I changed that. I think the absolute perfect choice for Superman is the guy John Hamm. He's on the show Mad Men. He played the lead cop in the movie The Town. I think – he is perfect for Superman. He has that 1950s type of – and that's why he's on the show Mad Men. It takes place in the early 60s, but about like an advertising firm in New York City. And he just – I'm like, if you look at him, Rob, put some glasses on him, he's Clark Kent to a T. But then also if like he worked out a bit, he could be Superman to a T, I feel. And I really would like to see him in it. And another thing –
As far as the rumors go, he is a top contender.
Good, good. I would love to see that. And I think with Christopher Nolan at the helm, another thing about Superman is that the problem is it's hard for people to relate to the character of Superman because he's like a god. He's this perfect human, and that's why characters I think like Batman and Spider-Man succeed so much. What I'd like to see in Christopher Nolan's adaptation of it is perhaps a little more focus on the character of Clark Kent, and because I don't think a lot of people have really dived into that. I know that there's Smallville, but that's more of like his teenage years and stuff. I would like to see more of the conflict because it's one person that has two identities that are more. The whole thing, it goes back to, what was it, on the second Kill Bill movie, of when Bill's talking about the mythology of Superman, but it's really...
Yeah, I've been dying to tear that apart for so long. I'm waiting till really? I can have a show where we can actually play it and discuss it and really just dissect it, because I hate that speech. It's so wrong.
Really?
It's so wrong.
But I mean, the practical part of it, of how he is Superman but becomes Clark Kent, I think, you know, and taking only that part from it.
Yeah, well, that's the part I have an issue with, because it's the reverse. Clark Kent is the true identity. Superman is the mask, whereas Batman is the reverse of that, where Batman is the true identity and Bruce Wayne is the mask.
Yeah, but Superman, he like always had those powers, though.
No, he did not.
When he came to Earth?
When he came to Earth, he did.
Yeah. But that's what I mean.
But just because you have the powers doesn't mean you are this icon that is a symbol. He was Clark Kent with powers, and then he decided to make himself into the symbol and the icon.
Well, that's stupid. No, I was kidding. Yeah. All right,
you know what I mean? Like, if you asked him who he was, he would say Clark Kent. If you asked Batman who he was, or asked Bruce who he was, he would say, "I'm Batman." That's who they are at a core.
Okay.
Like, Superman wants to be human.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and that's
my argument, I guess.
All right. But you just said it there. You put it better there. I want Christopher Nolan to touch more upon Superman's desire to be human.
Yeah.
Like, he's God, but then he wants to be on a, I guess you could say, a lower level of power, not like, you know, intellect, but he wants to be human so much. And I think that's where the movie could succeed, if he focuses on that. I think that's where the last one didn't, because Superman felt really android-like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he did.
He was just like, okay, it was like a robot. And I think if a reboot focuses a lot more on the human side of him.
Yeah, and you mentioned Smallville, and yes, it's an Elseworld, and yes, it's a younger version, but he's right on that cusp right now between being the Blur, as they call it, and Superman. But that's probably one of the reasons that the series has been so successful and has been on for 10 years, is because it's been about Clark Kent, and that's a character we can identify with. We haven't seen as much of the superhero perspective of things. Yes, he does everything super now and then and saves somebody, but it's really about Clark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and that's where things like that succeed, because people want to see things they can relate to.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
That's right. All right, so in relation back to our trilogy discussion, I'm going to throw...
Oh, tangent.
Yeah, I know, right? it was a good tangent, so I wanted to go with it. Okay. Our poll question this week is not what is your favorite trilogy, because I think they're well established. We were just kind of choosing our favorites out of the ones that are out there, but I'm going to twist it just a little bit and ask which movie trilogy climbed the highest only to fall the farthest. And what I mean by that is the first two movies were great and the third just boom, killed the whole trilogy in your mind. And I can think of several offhand. I'm not going to go over them right now because I want to get the ideas in from the fans. I'm sure they have ones that I haven't even thought of, but they are out there. They are out there and we know what they are, but which one of those was so, so good, climbed the highest, only to boom, get really smacked down by that third one the hardest? So if you have an answer for that question, send that into podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on the Twitter. And I'll be happy to hear it. Before we get into the listener emails, I'm assuming you haven't been to the movie theater too much recently, have you?
No. What was the last thing I saw? I think the last movie I saw was The Town.
Oh, okay. So you probably have not seen Due Date yet.
Nope.
Okay. Well, I wrote an article up on the site already, but I'll give a quick synopsis and my take on the movie. For those of you who don't feel like reading, that's one of the reasons I even do this show, is so you don't have to go read. A lot of people are just too lazy to actually read a whole movie review, but in the minute or two that takes me to actually say it, they're much more willing to get it that way, so let's do that. And this is spoiler-free, don't worry, I'm not going to give it anything major away. Basically, Due Date, the premise is that a character, Peter Hyman, who's played by Robert Downey Jr., he is an expecting father that literally bumps into aspiring actor Ethan Tremblay, who is played by the hilarious Zach Galifianakis, bumps into him at an airport and as both men are preparing to fly to Los Angeles. While Ethan has hopes of making it big in Hollywood, Peter is rushing home to be present for the birth of his child. As a result of a quick mishap on the plane and Peter losing his wallet, both men are added to the no-fly list, and now their only resort is to ride together to L.A. so Peter can make it back home in time. That's the premise.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds okay. It's an odd pairing between Robert Downey Jr. and Zach Galifianakis. And when I saw the trailers, I was kind of like, I don't know, but sometimes those odd couple movies work if the chemistry is good enough. In this situation, it wasn't. It was, they had some moments, but overall their chemistry just didn't flow between the two of them the way it should have. And the story was good. Yeah, but it's nothing that hasn't been done before. It's basically that movie where like the Robert Downey Jr. is kind of like the straight man and rushing home and he has a goal in mind. And Zach Galifianakis is just this bumbler that bad things just happen to and he just causes problem after problem for the guy.
Yeah, I wouldn't have the patience for it, man.
you've nailed it right on the head with that line right there. Like, it reminded me of like any Ben Stiller movie, and anyone who knows me knows I don't like Ben Stiller, and it's not because it's not funny. It's because like this movie, I ended up feeling so bad for the character of Peter that I became way too frustrated to find the funny moments to be as funny as they could have been.
Yeah, you get stressed out watching it.
Yeah.
I always feel that when I watch a movie.
Yeah, exactly. If I want to go and watch a comedy, I want to laugh. And yes, there were some moments, two or three, where I did laugh out loud. But ultimately, it was just so awkward and frustrating that I really wanted to like it and be entertained, but I was just aggravated.
Yeah, and that seems to be the formula every comedy genre movie is doing now. It's the same friggin' thing. It's just these frustrating, over-the-top situations. And that's, again, one of the reasons why I liked Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, because it was a breath of fresh air. It was something different, even though it was done in, like, animes and stuff. I was laughing. I didn't have to wait a half hour till I could laugh again. And nothing was really – I mean, some parts were – it wasn't frustrating to the point of where I can, even though I didn't see due date, where I can imagine that it's just these stupid, stressful moments in the movies where you just lose all patience. There wasn't really like that in Scott Pilgrim. And I'm losing patience for a lot of, and you can kind of identify those movies when the trailer comes out. Right. It's like, oh, here's another one of those.
Right. I know. And you look at the pairing and I really just got the feeling that, Robert Downey Jr. is at the height of his career right now. He's on a huge comeback. He did Iron Man, Iron Man 2. And regardless of what you think of those movies, he's probably at the top of his career right now. Zach Galifianakis is like the comedy it boy in Hollywood right now after The Hangover. And they're like, oh, this guy's at the top of his career. This guy's at the top of his. Let's mash them together and make this crazy movie. And it was good within the intentions of it, but the chemistry wasn't there to really support that pairing. So overall, this is a 2.5 out of 5.
Put it in the $3 bin at Walmart of DVDs.
Pretty much.
A few years.
Yeah. If you go, you'll get some enjoyment. Not enough for your dollar, though.
Negative.
Let's take a listen to some listener emails.
Yeah.
Last week's poll, I kind of threw out of left field, as Anna had said, and I asked, who is your favorite Ninja Turtles character? And not necessarily one of the Ninja Turtles, but anyone within that whole span of the Ninja Turtles universe. Were you a Ninja Turtles fan?
Totally. Grew up with it. My favorite was Casey Jones.
Yeah, I think he was a big popular one amongst the...
It
was kind of like one of our first anti-heroes growing up.
Yeah, exactly. He was. He's kind of like... But he had that mystery, kind of like the Boba Fett thing, because everybody in the 80s, you know, Boba Fett was usually the favorite from Star Wars. And
yep.
Casey Jones had that same type of charisma, you know, the badass.
Right.
But he would show up to help them out.
Totally. Let's see what we got for responses. Not a ton this week. I guess not as many Ninja Turtles fans out there as I thought, but some pretty good responses. The first one comes in from superfan Crest Tong, who's always right on the ball getting those things in. He says, "Hey, Rob, my favorite Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles character is Leonardo. Granted, I always wanted for them to come out with a rated R TMNT movie, because let's face it,
yeah,
everyone wants to see his swords tear shit up. Oh, and I always thought that April O'Neil from the movies was hot." Yeah, boy.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, Leonardo was my favorite, but then I got pissed that he wasn't cutting shit up with his swords. I'm like, dude, you got two katanas and like cut some of these mofo. But originally, Ninja Turtles, when it was a comic in Japan, it was pretty hardcore.
Oh yeah,
they would kill
and people. they all wore red.
Yeah, all wore red, exactly.
I'm pretty sure the only way to identify them was by their weapons.
Yep.
The next response comes in from Mike Volpe. He has a one-word answer: Michelangelo.
It's a party, dude.
Best theme ever.
Yeah.
Next response comes in from Joe Palumbo and says, "Rob, this is such a difficult question. There's so many things to consider. The Ninja Turtles hold a very special place in my heart. I still have all my action figures in storage, Turtle Van and Technodrome included. I also still have a Ninja Turtle sleeping bag in my trunk right now." If we're talking cartoon, Michelangelo. If we're talking movies, Casey Jones. If we're talking video games, especially the original for NES, Donatello. That friggin' game was so frustrating, man.
Dude, it was hard. And yeah, Donatello, I would save him for last. Because I think, is he talking about the game where you had to pick one of the four, but if one of them died, you couldn't pick him again?
Right.
Something. So yeah, I would save, I think I would start with Michelangelo, then Raphael, then Leonardo, then Donatello.
Yeah.
And yeah. And by the way, the first Ninja Turtles movie, I thought it doesn't get enough credit that it deserves. That was a really damn good movie, the live action one.
I agree, man. So good.
Yeah.
And that's actually what prompted the poll question. I saw it sitting on my DVD shelf. And yeah. I was like, I gotta know. Because I still have all my Ninja Turtle figures up in the attic somewhere.
Yeah, and my parents' house, I got them like in the basement somewhere, but...
Yeah. He does continue to go into a little more detail. It says, "Michelangelo was hysterical. Clearly the party dude, the one-liners, the awesome weapon skills. He was definitely the best. Casey Jones, sort of insane guy with a hockey mask and a golf bag and a bat. What's not to like? He was awesome in the cartoons, too, but I don't think he had as much personality as he did in the movies, that I remember anyway. It's been a while since I've seen the cartoons. If you've ever played any of the Ninja Turtles video games, you know Donatello's weapon had the longest reach, and therefore was the best choice for anything. Foot soldiers, troops of mousers, guys with chainsaws, people that shoot fire and are on fire. God, I hated those enemies in the NES game. Anyway, I won't take up any more of your time. Keep up the good work." So, very elaborate answer from Joe Palumbo, but a very well thought out one.
Yeah. And the arcade game was fun, too.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Really, let's see. The last response comes in from G1, and he says, "Napoleon Bonafrog was my favorite Ninja Turtles character.
Oh my god, I remember that."
"Not because he had any special role in the cartoon or comic, but because the action figure was one of my favorites growing up as a kid." He did include a picture, which I'll throw up in the show notes afterwards, too, when this goes live.
Nice.
So, a little Napoleon Bonafrog going on there. I remember... one of my favorite figures was the Usagi Yojimbo one, and it was so strange to find out that he wasn't even originally a Ninja Turtles character. He was pulled in from another comic book entirely.
Yeah, he had his own comic book. And dude, you're reading my thoughts right there, because I was just going to say that guy, too. He was awesome, too.
Oh, he was hardcore. He was like even more intense than Leo was.
Yeah.
But
his name in Japanese, I think, translates to rabbit. Bodyguard or something like that.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, Yojimbo means bodyguard and Usagi means rabbit.
Oh, makes sense for what he was.
Yeah, he was a bunny rabbit that was like samurai.
Yeah. Well, my favorite was Donatello, just because for whatever reason I always gravitate towards the tech guy.
Yeah, he was a smart dude.
Yeah.
He was, I liked his weapon too, the bow staff.
Yeah, I always liked the non-lethal thing.
But, yeah, but it was more lethal than nunchucks.
This is true. Mm. But Michelangelo's a party dude. He's not about killing.
Nah, he's a party dude. Party animal. When I was a kid, I got a quick story.
Yeah.
I grew up in Somerville, which is right outside Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a little kid, a bunch of kids in the neighborhood, we tried lifting up a manhole cover because we thought Ninja Turtles were in it. It took like four of us to lift this thing up with, I don't know, we had like some pieces of sticks or woods or whatever. And we lifted it up. We're like, oh, rad. We're like, I bet you this thing goes all the way to New York and then we could go to the Ninja Turtles. And I think we tried closing it and some kid got his fingers stuck in it and he was screaming and some big guy had to come and lift it up and yelled at us. And he's like, what were you doing that? And we're like, we thought Ninja Turtles were down there. And he started laughing at us and walked away.
And that's one of those situations where parents would immediately complain and be like, oh, well, they were playing with a manhole cover because you guys would have found something else stupid to do, honestly.
Yeah. Well, then we had a Ninja Turtle club, but it got violent because it was the kids at the top of the street versus the kids at the bottom of the street. I mean, each of us had a Ninja Turtle character. I think it was Raphael. And then it got like violent. Like, I think the parents had to break it up because we were fighting and like legitimately fighting. And they're like, you guys got to stop. Like, kids are idiots.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It's always just finding something. If it's not one thing, it's another. So,
yeah.
That violence would have been present one way or the other.
Yeah. Boys will be boys. So.
That's right. Well, then let's start taking a look at the news. Top story this week. We mentioned it briefly. The Green Lantern trailer has been released. Now, it looks a lot better than I expected it to. The one thing that I'm really happy about is that the suit isn't totally green, as the original preview image suggested. But the thing that I'm not so happy about is that I'm still really concerned that Hal Jordan isn't being portrayed properly. He kind of feels like a mashup between Hal and Kyle Rayner, and I don't understand this trend by Hollywood that they feel they have to have their leading guy in a superhero movie be like the cocky funny just because Tony Stark was so successful as Iron Man. You can still do a serious character because Hal is much more of a serious guy. He's not the like the quick-witted, fast-talking Kyle Rayner type. Batman proved it. You can have a serious character and still have a successful movie. So I don't know. I'm worried. I almost wish that they had skipped over Hal and done Kyle if they're going to do it this way.
Yeah, man. And again, that's my total beef with that trailer too. I'm like, who is this guy? Like, and it goes back to what we talked about earlier. Hollywood thinks people are morons and, oh, we got to mix every genre type of movie in it. And it's like, I want to see a superhero movie. I don't want to see a comedy. And watching the trailer, it's just so over the top. Like he's in this crazy nice house and wakes up sleeping with some hot blonde and probably doesn't know her name, is late for work, drives in his Mustang to work, and the acting in the trailer looked terrible.
Yeah.
His instructor or boss, whatever, she's like, Hal, you are late, this test is important. And and he's so wisecracky. And
yeah, and that whole intro sequence you said is so out of character for Hal Jordan.
Yeah, I'm like, that isn't Hal Jordan.
It's Tony Stark.
It is. Yeah, that's what it was. That's Tony Stark, and that's Hal Jordan is more noble, and the whole thing was about willpower and how he's fearless, not that he's a fuck-up and fearless.
Right, and he never started off as, like, the over-cocky, arrogant, like, bumbler that Tony was and then found his way. He just kind of was, you know?
That's why they chose him.
Right. So it's an odd take, and I'm hoping, I don't know. I don't even know what to hope, you know? I really don't.
It's hard to find hope, yeah, I know. Because I like the Green Lantern character, and it looks like one of those flops. But again, hope I'm totally wrong.
And visually, it does look cool. There's a little complaint about the costume CGI and stuff, but I think it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I could have done without the CGI, but then all the other alien characters, they look spot on to who they are in the
comic. Yeah, Kilowog looked awesome.
Yeah, looked really good.
Yeah, and it's nice to see the diversity between the costumes even.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'll go see it.
Yeah, I will too, absolutely. We talked about it also briefly. The Cowboys and Aliens teaser trailer was also released, which looks, again, pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks interesting.
I've never been a huge fan of Westerns.
Yeah, what I mean, my dad, I grew up on a lot of old war movies and westerns, Rob. So, they weren't my favorite as a kid, but I got exposed to them. And as I grew older, again, it became more a picky thing because a lot of them, the old ones, there's so many westerns done, and a lot of them are really hard for me to watch.
Yeah.
But the newer ones, Tombstone with Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer is excellent. If you're going to watch a Western, I recommend that one.
As far as Westerns go, I actually really like Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis.
Really? I never saw that.
So I love it.
I'll have to check that out. But this does look interesting because you would never think combining a Western with sci-fi aliens. And the trailer looks to have a convincing type of environment to it, the technology, and it doesn't look wacky. It looks pretty interesting. But again, I kind of, at the same time, I'm like, I kind of would have liked to seen a really good Western with just Harrison Ford and Daniel Craig, because I love those two actors. So.
The one thing I can say confidently is that it is not Wild Wild West.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad it's not something like that. Jeez, forget it.
Right. go ahead.
I'm surprised there's, for geekness goes, the rise of steampunk. It's sort of this underground sort of cult thing, but I'm waiting for there to be a mainstream movie that focuses a lot on the whole steampunk genre and culture, I guess I'd put it.
I bet you it's right over the horizon.
Yeah, we'll watch for it. It has to be coming out. So.
Yeah, they have to have an amazing art director to do that, though.
I'd hope so, yeah.
Let's see. Third story is also in relation to a trailer. I rarely bring up trailers necessarily, but I'm not even the biggest Winnie the Pooh fan in the entire world, but one thing I am insanely happy to see with this trailer, when I first saw my newsfeed and it said Winnie the Pooh trailer, I'm like, oh my god, they're giving it the Yogi Bear treatment. We're going to see CGI Pooh and Tigger and blah, blah, blah. I am so psyched that Disney is doing something using classic animation on the big screen again.
Yeah, dude, I haven't watched the trailer yet, but I read an article the other day about that. I said, and I didn't know what they were talking about. And then recently I saw Winnie the Pooh trailer up, but I haven't had a chance to watch it. I said, oh, wait, I think this is what they're mentioning. And yeah, I applaud them because I don't want to see a 3D CGI Yogi. I mean, Winnie the Pooh thing like Yogi.
Right.
And
right.
That's good because I don't think 2D is lost. It's there's still an art to it, and people want to see it. You know, Winnie the Pooh is a classic children's book and story. So.
Yeah,
keep it classic.
And I'm not like I said, I'm not the biggest Winnie the Pooh fan in the world, but I will go see this. I will go see this just to support the classic animation. I implore the audience, go see Winnie the Pooh just because we need more of this back. This is what kids need to see. This has more personality. This has more character than a lot of those terrible CGI animated movies. Pixar excluded. Those are amazing. But,
oh, yeah, I was going to say that things like Toy Story, I think, are phenomenally well done. But it's the in-between all these other – like, for
absolutely.
Every one of those, there's like four or five really crappy
it's
ones.
The Yogi the Bear. It's the Garfield. It's all those ones that should have stayed purely animated that it should not be coming to live action or should be done in a manner far different than what they're doing.
Precisely.
There's a lot of Marvel vs. Capcom 3 news. It's been a while, a little bit of a drought since the last Comic-Cons, since we've had any news. But there are some new trailers announcing two new characters. Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is continuing to expand the roster as they add She-Hulk to the Marvel side and Mega Man's Zero to the Capcom side.
Nice. Yeah, I hope they add a lot of eccentric-type characters that sort of make us say, huh, oh yeah, I'd like to see that. Because I know that there's that program, Mugen, where you can make your own character.
Yep.
And it's very unofficial, but I can't wait for Marvel's Capcom 3. It looks amazing, and there's so many characters I'd like to see. I hope they don't limit it. And, dude, is Thor going to be in it?
Oh, yeah, they've already announced Thor.
All and right,
the,
good,
the videos,
good.
Go to the site, check out the videos. Thor looks amazing.
Yeah, I'll check that out later. Like, but yeah, people like Thor. I'd love to see like a Doctor Strange in it.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff
oh,
like that.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be so cool. Imagine the moves he could pull off.
That's what I mean. Put like Blanka in it from Street Fighter.
Yep.
Things like that. And because, I met Marvel's Capcom, probably my favorite fighting game.
Yeah. In addition to that, a listing on GameStop revealed the game's first DLC characters. They will be Resident Evil's Jill Valentine and Marvel's Shuma Gorath. They'll both be made available 4 weeks after the launch of the game.
Hmm. I'm not too thrilled on Shuma Gorath. I remember him from, it was Marvel vs. Street Fighter.
Yep.
It wasn't that good of a import to the first PlayStation because, again, they had that whole issue with you couldn't tag like you could in the arcade.
Right.
But, Shuma Gorath, he was kind of like a Marvel version of Zangief, but he had one of the most powerful super moves. Like, he could throw you into some dimension and half your life was gone.
Right.
Something, but it was hard. You had to, like, grab the guy like Zangief would have to grab you.
The last piece of Marvel vs. Capcom 3 news is that Capcom has confirmed a launch date of February 15th, 2011.
And we're going to have a huge party.
We are. It's not even that far away. I'm so freaking excited, honestly. And
yeah, man.
When I bought Assassin's Creed Brotherhood from Amazon, I got a $15 voucher for my next video game purchase on the site. And it expires at the end of February. So my $15 is going towards Marvel vs. Capcom 3. No doubt.
Sweet.
Sweet. The next Wolverine movie has a title. Darren Aronofsky, the director, revealed the title for the new Wolverine movie starring Hugh Jackman to be The Wolverine. I know. I'm not thrilled with the title.
Not thrilled with the title, but I did read your synopsis of its setting.
Yeah, Aronofsky said that the Wolverine will be a one-off or standalone project. That's good news because the last Wolverine movie was kind of crappy. The story involves Logan beginning a forbidden romance with a Japanese woman whose hand in marriage is unfortunately promised to another man. Since Logan won't take no for an answer, it puts him into battle with her father and her samurai sword-wielding brothers.
Yeah, and I really dig one of the best story settings or sagas from the Wolverine comic was the Japanese setting when he really had this whole bout with that sort of feudal Japan type of environment, and it really, I thought, was a great mix for the character of Wolverine. And yeah. I'm looking a lot forward to this movie. Then I still haven't seen the other one because everybody told me just to stay away from it. Mike and you and it's just like, don't bother.
Yeah, you're not missing anything major, but as per the description of this one, I'm pretty sure we're going to see some Silver Samurai action.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I think it's kind of foretelling. The next story, I don't know entirely how to pronounce this. I'm assuming it's Vudu. Vudu Movie Service is coming to PS3 on November 23rd. Sony has announced plans to introduce a third-party video provider onto the PS3 cross-media bar. Starting November 23rd, Vudu will join a growing list of video apps available on the console, currently including Netflix, Hulu Plus, MLB TV, and NHL Game Center. Like the PSN Movie Store, Vudu is not subscription-based, so it may help to offer some healthy competition between the two.
Nice, dude. Excuse me. I gotta add some water here and talk like I'm a
smoker. You're a hipster now.
In the Yukon, yeah. Anyways, dude, I gotta get a PS3.
Yeah, I agree.
That's what it comes down to.
That's really what it comes down to.
And I'll be locked away in my apartment.
Forever.
Yeah. I already am, kind of. So. I don't go out. I can't. I'm not allowed.
On the Rumor Central front, The Dark Knight Rises is looking to cast two female roles. An article on Deadline suggests that Christopher Nolan is casting for two different female roles, both that of Bruce Wayne's romantic interest and that of a female villain. Nolan has been rumored to have met with actresses Anne Hathaway, Keira Knightley, Blake Lively, Natalie Portman, Naomi Watts, and Rachel Weisz.
I'm excited, man. Again, I just say let the man do what he's got to do.
Yep.
And I think a lot of people want to see Catwoman.
Yeah, I think so. That seems to be a big rumor, although Riddler was a big rumor too, and look at what happened with that.
Yeah, that was a huge... It was so big a rumor that people were saying that, oh, it's a fact, yeah, because... what's his name? Joseph Hewitt-Levitt, is that his
Joseph
name?
Gordon-Levitt.
Gordon-Levitt, yeah. Yep. That he was going to play it, the Riddler, or something like that.
Right, and we don't even know if he's going to be in it for sure. He has cast Tom Hardy from Inception, but...
Yeah.
We don't know. There are some rumors that he'll be playing Hugo Strange, which is an interesting choice since it's not really like a mainstream bat villain.
Yeah. No, I just say, yeah, let the man do what he's going to do because it'll be a good job.
He'll make the right decisions, I have no doubt.
Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, The Dark Knight was just so amazing, and I wonder how he can top it, but just go with it.
Yep, yep. I'm going to throw out a quick reminder of the poll question. I said it just a little while ago, but which movie trilogy climbed the highest only to fall the farthest? In other words, the first two movies are great. Third one killed it for you. Send those answers to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on Twitter. We're going to start wrapping up episode 18 right now. Dave, do you have a plug or a final thought you'd like to give?
Drink lots of water when you do podcasts, and also water is good for you.
It is. Eight glasses a day, but don't drown yourself.
No, then you do a lot of pee-pee.
Yes, so. Far too much.
No, that's about it, man. You know, good to be back, and hopefully we'll do a lot more. And this was fun. So.
Awesome. Strong showing. Good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks, man.
All right. If you like the show, I ask you to please tell your friends. If you'd like to visit the site for any of the articles we talked about in the news, or even just the massive amount of awesomeness I have up there, the New York Comic Con photo gallery is finally up. The Halloween costume gallery is also up. If you'd like to send in Halloween pictures, I'll still take them and put them up there. Same email address for those, but the site is at www.thegeekgeneration.com. On that site, there is a button to subscribe to this show in iTunes. Right now, we only have 3 reviews written, 7 reviews given. Please, while you're there, rate the show, write a review. You'd be doing us a huge favor by doing that. There's also a donation button on the Geek Generation site that no one will ever use. If you have any questions, comments, insults, or topics you would like us to discuss on a future episode, send those to podcast@thegeekgeneration.com or @geekgeneration on the Twitter. If you'd like to submit an article to the site or an audio file to this show, you can send those to guest@thegeekgeneration.com. And as always, the show theme is provided by Machine Supremacy. A link to their site can be found on our site. So wrapping up episode 18, a good time as always. Thank you for being here, Dave.
Night-night.
Night-night. We will see you next time on The Geek Generation.